Sound of Discovery Bay. The Town of Discovery Bay CSD regular board meeting is now called to order. Would everyone please rise to the pledge of allegiance led by
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call.
Roll call has been taken and let the record reflect that all members are present.
Okay, now is the time for public comments. This is the time when the public can comment on issues within the district that is not on the agenda. Any person wishing to speak must come up and speak at the podium. There is a 3-minute time limit run by the vice chair. And speak please to the board. And I have one card, so we'll call that. And that's Terry Mahim.
Good evening, Terry Mahaney, Discovery Bay Boulevard. I was just wondering if there's been any discussion or any advanced inner workings with the license plate readers and the intersection up here at Discovery Bay Boulevard and Newport and on down where everybody passes, not everybody, but too many pass in the no pass lane. So maybe one of these a gentleman can speak about it. So thank you very much.
That would be my recommendation. Thank you, Terry. Any other public comments? Please.
Self-service.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Sandra James, and I live over on Greencastle and Lakes. And I was just wanting to know if there's ever, if there will be, or if there's ever been any anybody look into the parking at the schools. My kids go to a different point, and parking's just always an issue. People speeding through the area, through the parking lot, and just we're always concerned that their kid may get run over. You know, I just don't know what we can do. Maybe the officers can speak to that.
Sure.
Thank you.
And is there a particular time of the day that happens?
Oh, yes. During drop-offs and pickups. A lot more during, I guess I would say, during drop-off because everybody's running late. So everybody's just speeding through. And the officers have showed up, the resource officers park and look, but there's nobody helping maybe guide the cars to hurry up and get through.
Thank you. Any other public comments? Seeing none, I'll close public comments. And we'll move on to the Section C, Consent Calendar.
Move approval of Consent Calendar.
Before you move to approval, I would like to see if there's any public comment. Seeing none, I'll close public comment.
Move approval of Consent Calendar.
Second.
I hear a first and a second. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Passed. On to item D1, Supervisor Burgess. Leah?
Hello, good evening, board members. Tonight I want to talk about the Delta Plan, the 5-year review. The Delta Stewardship Council is conducting a 5-year review of its Delta plan. As part of this review, the council is seeking the perspectives of those with an interest in the Delta plan by conducting an online survey. Your participation in the survey will assist the council in evaluating the effectiveness of the plan and achieving its co-equal goals to provide a more reliable water supply for California and to protect, restore, and enhance the Delta ecosystem in a manner that protects and enhances the unique cultural, recreational, natural resource, and agricultural values of the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta as an evolving place. The online survey closes this Friday, February 8th, so you can locate the survey on the Delta Stewardship Council's website, so we encourage you all to participate. And then the county is dealing currently with the 2020 census. It's just around the corner. So every 10 years, the federal government counts all persons living in the United States. The U.S. Census Bureau collects this information, which is then used to determine the number of representatives in Congress each state will have and how $675 million of federal funds flow to tribal, state, and local governments. Census data is also used to make decisions at every level of government that will affect our communities, siting of schools, hospitals, libraries, and public services. Businesses rely on the census data for planning future locations for retail stores, new housing developments, and other business decisions. It is of utmost importance that Contra Costa County achieve a full count. An undercount could deprive Contra Costa County of millions of dollars in federal funds per year. It is estimate that in California, the annual federal allocation of funding based on census data is estimated at almost $2,000 per resident per year, according to California Department of Finance. Therefore, an undercount of 5,000 residents in Contra Costa County represents $9.7 million. There are two significant changes in the 2020 census. First, this is the first time the census will be online. The new technology will make it easier to respond to the census because there are more options for self-response with the intent of reducing door-to-door canvassing. The second significant change is the addition of the citizenship status question and the potential for the question to reduce participation among immigrant communities, especially given the change in social and political climate. If immigrants shun the census, it would cause a significant undercount that would affect the number of congressional seats for California and the amount of federal funding in states and communities with a large number of immigrants. The question is currently being challenged in court by California Attorney General on the grounds it could cause many immigrants to skip the 2020 census out of fear their information could be used against them, even though it is illegal to share a person's census response with law enforcement or immigration agencies. The Contra Costa County Department of Conservation and Development and County Administrator's Office staff has begun the process required to have an effective complete count, including forming partnerships with federal, state, and local census staff. In support of the strategy, the governor has created an advisory committee called the California Complete Count Committee. The committee is a volunteer panel of 25 community leaders representing diverse populations from across the state. So the county has begun preliminary preparation to convene a local government complete count committee with the goal of connecting with trusted voices in the county. So the role of the LCCC is to develop and implement a 2020 census awareness campaign based upon their knowledge of local community to encourage a response with a particular emphasis on the hard to count communities. The hard to count population in Contra Costa County consists of immigrants, minorities, low income households, non-English speaking households, youth, transients, unemployed, homeless persons living in unconventional housing, including those who do not trust government. So we're gonna be doing a kickoff April 1st, and then between July and March, we'll be holding events all over Contra Costa County to maximize the outreach effort. And March of 2020 is when the internet self-response begins. And then May through July, whatever data we have not collected, then the non-responsive follow-up, then we'll be going door-to-door looking for residents. And then by January, or by December 2020, then when we have to report those numbers to the state. So I apologize for being a little lengthy, but I thought it was important, and I'm sure we're going to be leaning on you as leaders to help us get the information from your community here.
I had a question. How is the community going to know about the online website?
So that's part of the outreach effort that that the county is putting together. There's the LCC, now I forgot what it stands for, but anyhow, it's a committee by the county that's put together by residents of from East County, South County, West County, South County. And so that's going to be part of the outreach effort in each of those areas.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any public comment? Move on to sheriff's report.
Good evening. Lieutenant Pulling, the Sheriff's Office, Delta Station, with the monthly report for January 2019. The Delta Station deputies ran a total of 459 calls for service in the Discovery Bay area. The leading categories The top category, unfortunately, is false alarms from residents and or businesses. We had about 50 of those. We had additional parking enforcement, was pretty good. We have our community service officer out there with probably 49 contacts to address parking issues. And then other large categories was service to citizens. We had about 60. And that's pretty much just the deputies out contacting people, solving bring resolution to some issues, neighbor issues, parking issues, various things like that. So that's the highlight of the calls. The two assigned deputies had a total of 190 calls amongst themselves, the two of them, with a total of 11 sites for the the stops, split equally between moving violations and vehicle equipment violations, taillights broken, not properly registered, items like that. And then lastly, they had 17 total warnings in the area. So comment on the license plate reader. On Monday, myself and Captain Morley visited with the provider, of the license plate readers. We went up and took another visit to all the sites with their trained eye to see if the sites we're looking at are feasible. And with that, we're asking him to get back to us with to use the original quote as a foundation, and then any tweaks or changes that he can get back to us with additional numbers, dollars, or what any changes may cost. We're also working with Caltrans now to get power to the lights that we need to use and to access their infrastructure, the poles, to mount those lights. So with two groups, Sheriff's Office, Caltrans, and the County Public Works, are all working, three groups working together to get us closer to the license plate readers. And then I think there's another question in regards to parking the schools. We're working with, we're trying to get out there during the school morning time and afternoon time. We have one of the CSOs who spent some time in the morning as a presence. The staffing of the resident deputies is in the afternoon. It doesn't hit that target area in the morning, but we're trying to hit the target area in the afternoon. We just ask the parents to abide by the laws. A lot of complaints are stop sign violations when kids are in the area. So I'll talk with CHP to see if we can get some additional coverage from them also. Questions?
And just a quick one on the license plate readers. Is there a time frame that you've established in terms of getting Caltrans and everybody together?
I don't have the specific. That's a question I didn't ask because Kevin Borgley is still running the project. I know we're pushing to get it out there as quick as we can, and I believe that Kevin Borgley and myself are interested in getting it as fast as possible. The deputies are excited to have it, so we are pushing to get that happen. To make it happen.
It would be something we'd have completed by year's end, correct?
Oh, I would hope it would take a major the development of a major hurdle to stop us from completing by year's end. But that based on my understanding. Okay.
Thank you.
Questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any public comment? Mr. Helfer.
Bill Helfrich, 661 Neighbor Court. I've already stated my objections to this because of the invasion of privacy, but it's my understanding that to implement this, there should be a plan that the Sheriff's Department and the county has put together as to who has access to it, how long this information will be kept, and who will have it, who will be available to. I wanted to know if that had been done yet.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay, thank you. And on to CHP, Officer Thomas.
Hello, Board Member Officer Thomas of the High Patrol Contra Costa area. For the last month, the activity we had out here arrest-wise in Discovery Bay, we had two DUI arrests. We had six DUI arrests. Two were for under the influence of marijuana, and the others were for under the influence of alcohol. We had one warrant arrest. One arrest for a hit-and-run collision, and then two arrests for a driving on suspended license. That's the arrest that we had out here. The citations, in the township of Discovery Bay, we had 14 for speed, 2 for other rules of the road, 6 registration, 1 equipment violation, 1 improper turning, 1 stop sign, and 1 seatbelt violation. Bixler Road area, out over here, kind of Lakes area, 7 for speed, 2 for registration, 1 seatbelt, 1 cell phone. And then the general area right around Discovery Bay here, we had 13 for speed, 2 for registration, 1 seatbelt, 3 cell phones, 1 improper turning, 1 stop sign, and 2 right-of-way violations. To address the issue, I went last week and this week, and then the week before I spent a day out at Timber Point School. I went out there, did some enforcement, impounded a vehicle out there. The issue out there that we're having with the parking is predominantly during pickup, is when people come pick their children up. This week and last week, I just drove through and gave quite a bit of verbal warnings to people about basically just paying attention to the signage that says no parking in specific areas. So it's just a issue of people not paying attention to the sign out there. The people I gave warnings to, I just basically said we're going to start issuing citations if people can't do it. I address it with the school. So it's an issue, and I know a lot of other schools too, like Brentwood has the same issue. There's got to be some give and take too. There's really not parking and availability for parents to come pick it up. So it's like, you know, are we going to put up a half hour of inconvenience for people? But too, you got to look in the perspective of for the safety of the children and such like that. So you guys have any questions for me?
We're good. Thanks.
Okay, guys. Thank you. Thanks. Thank you.
Any public comment? And I do have a card that came in, and I believe it fits in your Rosa. Cabinas?
Cabinas.
Okay.
Very close. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello. My name is Rosa Cabinas. I live at 217 Dorchester, and I have lived there for about 15, 16 years. And I just wanted to point out and see if there's anything that can be done about the speeding on Bixler and the Newport and Point of Timber area. People are coming 60 miles an hour. There is speed limits, of course, near Safeway where that housing is, and then it lessens as you go up the street. People are, I think, not even adhering to the 45-mile posted speed near the post office or above the post office on Marsh Creek. And by the time they reach our homes, they're going 60 miles an hour. There was an accident. Latter part, I believe, of last year where a car was hit broadside and rolled over. Trying to get out of Newport onto Bixler. And in this me first environment that we live in, nobody heeds to someone else's needs. So I'm asking, is there any way that we can implement a speed limit on all of Bixler?
So just for your information, the board is not able to discuss the subjects that come up because they are not on the agenda.
Correct.
But the law enforcement is behind you, and if you want to take just a little time with them, they might be able
to. I would love to, yes, yes. And also the other half of my comment would be these huge vehicles that have excessive muffler noises, and they go up and down Bixler all times of the hour, especially on weekends. I think Bixler really needs to be monitored a little bit more. And I know that in my home, I hear my neighbor across the street every time he comes and goes with that car. So those are my comments.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other public comment? Okay. ECC and PE, fire protection.
Good evening, board.
Hey.
My name is Battalion Chief Ross and from the East Contra Costa Fire Protection District. And here is our operations report. You know, I did not have a chance to see all of you last month, so I've got December and January here. So it's going to be a little longer than normal, but I will be brief. In the month of January, there are 52 calls in Discovery Bay with an response time of 10 minutes, 3 seconds. Luckily, no major incidents for the month of January in Discovery Bay. In the month of December, there were 56 calls with an average response time of 9 minutes and 7 seconds. Also, no major incidents in Discovery Bay, which is good. For the district in January, there were 689 calls for service with an average response time of 8 minutes. This includes responding to 4 residential structure fires, 2 commercial fires, 4 vehicle fires, 1 vegetation fire, and 6 exterior fires. We also had 28 vehicle accidents with an additional 13 requiring rescue, 1 auto versus pedestrian, and 1 bicycle accident. For December, we actually had a little bit less calls. We ran 605 calls for the month of December, with an average response time of 8:14. That included responding to 5 residential structure fires, 1 commercial fire, 2 vehicle fires, and 6 exterior fires. There were 27 vehicle accidents last month in December with 8 requiring rescue, 1 vehicle versus pedestrian, and 3 motorcycle accidents. So for 2018, we're putting together some final numbers, and we had ran 7,719 calls for service for the calendar year. That's a 2.5% increase from the year prior. That includes, and this, we've discussed this before, 457 total auto accidents for the district. I'm still finalizing those numbers. Next month, I will have that report for you. I know that's something we talked about many times last year. So I will have the percent increases and all the details by our March meeting here. So of those 457 auto accidents, 123 required rescue. So again, that was the last time I checked with you, that was a 40% increase. That seems to have held true. I'll have some again final numbers in March for that. Some good things happening. Our fire marshal announcement went out, so we are in the process right now of accepting applications for our very first fire marshal. That person, whomever we hire, will be the first fire marshal for our district. It's an awesome time, and we'll have a lot more control over things like weed abatement and business inspections and things like that. So when we hire them, we should hope to have them on between May and June, and I'll definitely bring them to this meeting tonight. So. Speaking of fire marshals and weeds, a lot of heavy rain lately, so we encourage everybody in Discovery Bay and our whole district to keep your weeds down. It's kind of just how California is now. If it's too dry, the weeds are bad and burn. If it gets too wet, they grow too much, the weeds are bad and burn. Please keep your weeds down. And we will be actively doing some more intense weed abatement initiatives coming up. We're really trying to put together a better game plan for this next season, especially with the way things happened last year. A lot of fires, and with the new fire marshal coming on, we're really gonna take a more proactive approach in getting our weeds down and our fire breaks down across the district. On top of that, one thing I wanna invite everybody here to, and more of a, I need to ask, but some favors too. April 13th, we are having our very first inaugural volunteer firefighter recognition ceremony. So what this is, we decided that it was high time we recognized the prior volunteers who had served this community and all the communities in our district for all those years prior to the East Contra Costa Fire District forming. As we know, Discovery Bay was a volunteer fire department at some point, for a long time before they came into our big giant fold. So, April 13th, 10 a.m. at the Knightson School, they have a fire memorial there. That's where the event will be held, and it's our first one. We plan on doing this every year. All the former volunteers and community members are invited to attend the event as we recognize them. Why I'm asking for a little bit of help is we're still trying to identify people who are volunteers in the community. We have a good list from somewhere, but if anybody the board knows, anybody in this crowd knows, a former Discovery Bay volunteer, please have them get a hold of us so we can send them an invite and they can come to the event. We don't want to miss anybody, but we know that some of these list roles can be very long from years past. Records aren't kept sometimes. Sometimes things get thrown away. So if you know anybody, maybe an old neighbor you have, even if they've moved away, reach out to them, have them call us so we can get them on the invite list and have them come to this ceremony. And that is about, well, not quite. The last thing I would like to briefly introduce Director Carrie Nash. She is our brand new elected fire board member. She's sitting in the audience. She will come and talk to you guys here in a sec. But I'd like to welcome her and I look forward to working with her, and I'm sure we all do. So that is my report tonight, and I'm available for questions.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Very
good report.
I do have one question. I think you said roughly 53 in November or 56 for Discovery Bay calls.
Yes.
Do you, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but do you know the percentage of health
The reason being health, medical, on the call.
Off the top of this, what I could get a note, but I can get that over you. So, if you would like, I can add that to future reports. It's actually pretty easy for me to break down the way we track numbers. So, okay. I can do that.
Thank you.
Cool. Yeah.
Any public comments? Hearing none, we'll move on. Carrie's, she got her head down. Oh.
Can I have a comment? I already
is this a time you're going to comment?
No, you can't.
I know she did last night. Did we put you on the spot? Okay. Thank you. I'll move on. Now that we woke you up. Okay. Presentation, staff?
Yes. At the close of swim season last year, we embarked on a pool renovation project. During that project in November, we decided to put it on hold and look at the possibility of expanding the pool to a competition-sized pool. In order to gather data to make an informed decision on whether to proceed with expanding the pool, we engaged the services of Terracon to conduct a geographical report analysis and a site assessment to arrive at what it would take to engineer such a pool as we envisioned, the competition pool, and whether those numbers based on those assessments, what would they look like? Well, here tonight, we have Ron Bravo with Terracon to give you an executive summary of the geological report and the site assessment, in which the full reports should be ready and available tomorrow, is my understanding. And so with that, I invite Ron Bravo to come up and give you that executive summary.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Ward. As we started to engage in the study, we did it basically in three parts. The geotechnic study, which we were going to base our design upon, and then a property condition assessment, which is the site, the buildings, and surrounding area, including ADA access, and then the last one would be the pool feasibility. So the geotechnic report was completed last week, and it was completed last week. Pretty favorable findings. The pool does not have to be built on piers, which is generally a big cost adder to a swimming pool, could sometimes double the cost of the pool. So what we found in the geotech report was that merely we just have to thicken the floor of the pool and add a little bit more rebar. So we've accommodated for that in our cost estimates. The property condition report, which was just finished, like Mike said, will be sent to him tomorrow. Essentially, we found roughly $17,000 of immediate repairs around the site having to do with drainage, minor issues. We also looked at 10 years out on the building and the surrounding area, and we're suggesting a reserve for the next 10 years of about $165,000. None of those numbers really play into the feasibility of building the pool or not, but they're numbers to be aware of for you for other repairs on the site. The one issue in the property condition assessment report that would relate to the pool project is the ADA access issues. We cited roughly $29,000 worth of repairs that would be required for ADA compliance should you update the swimming pool. And finally, with regard to the feasibility of building the swimming pool, we looked at three different options, the first option being the bare minimum of what it would take to have a competitive type club-level swimming pool. And if you look through the drawings that you sent, that's option one, you can see that it's a 75 by 43-foot pool with a very small L section. And the depth on that end of the pool would be 3'6" as required by code. On the opposite end of the pool, we're showing six starting blocks with a water depth of 7 feet. And that is what we would consider a minimum swimming pool for public use that would accommodate competition. Option two shows a slightly larger L section. Again, 3'6" depth at the base of the stair, but on the shallow end wall of the pool, the depth is 4 feet. And that allows for a more competitive venue. Flip turns are much more easily accommodated in 4 foot depth than 3'6". But since the state code requires 3'6" depth, we made a minimum size L section to accommodate for that. And on the opposite end of the pool, the same 7 foot depth for starting blocks. Option three is a 400 square foot L section. Again, it accommodates the competitive envelope of 4 foot to 7 foot, and now a 400 square foot L section with water depths ranging from 3'6" or 3 or 2 to 4 feet. That's kind of a variable. It will be based on the program and what you desire as programmatic needs. The intent is to provide more shallow water for toddlers and learn to swim programs where sometimes 3'6" or 4 foot water might be considered too deep for kids or young children. The cost numbers, which include a skimmer type of circulation pool, deck equipment, loose equipment, maintenance equipment, safety equipment, 10 foot wide pool deck, and including design costs for option one is about $1,065,700. And that includes the design fees. So that would work in, and it also includes typical soft costs. Option two, with the larger L section, is about $1,088,500. And finally, option three, oops, I think I just did them out of order. Yeah, that was option three. Option two, with the smaller L section, is $1,065,000. So, I got them backwards.
Yeah, you did get them out of order.
I got them backwards. Yeah, it's $1,065,000 for the small L, $1,088,000 for the small L is $1,065,000 for just the stair section, and $1,122,000 for the large L section.
I got a question. What did you say, just out of curiosity, on option three, which shows a larger L section, it's about 400 square feet, I think you indicated.
Yes.
20 by 20. What's the depth from the water from the stairs to the actual body of the pool?
We haven't completely defined that.
Okay.
Right now on the drawing, it shows 3'6" to 4".
And I thought you had mentioned 3 foot in your presentation, and that's why I was asking the question.
And it could even be 2 foot.
Okay.
So,
all right.
So
very
we
good.
Haven't. We
understood. It's not going to affect the cost that much.
It's not going to affect the cost that much, but it's one of those things that once we get into the design phase, should we go that direction, that's when we start programming the pool a little bit more.
This got
is
it.
More a costing exercise.
So what staff is looking for, and I know you have more additional questions here, but what we're looking for, it's not a decision tonight, but more of a recommendation of how you want to proceed to drill down into this information and come back with a decision. It could be through an ad hoc committee or through a standing committee or some other recommendation.
Thank you. Thank you, staff. Any other questions?
Yeah, I have one. What did you look at it for the toddler side of it, for moms and young under two, I guess? Having a separate, maybe a circular 18-foot diameter or something like that.
A wading pool could always be added.
What would be approximate, just a ballpark, something like that?
You generally figure on something like that about $175 a square foot, so it would depend on the size. And the thing to keep in mind, though, a lot of older facilities you saw that were like that use the same filtration system, chemical system, and circulation system complete. That's no longer allowed in the state of California. So it would have to be a complete separate filtration system because they don't allow the two bodies of water to co-mingle.
Got it.
Is that, would that, in the 175 per square foot number you're referencing, that includes that separate filtration system?
Yes.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I have a question. So in your analysis, is this, are these numbers based on replacing the existing pool in the existing location, or could this new pool be anywhere in the community center area?
It could be just about anywhere. Although these prices do include the assumption that we're going to reuse the existing pad for equipment and an existing structure that's already planned for.
I guess where I was going, in your analysis though, do we look at the highest and best location of the pool within the community center?
We only look at this location. That's where the soils report was done. So there's no guarantee that we have favorable soils there. If we put it someplace else on the site, you would probably very likely, due to the nature of this whole community, have to look at whatever soils those are as well. But no, we primarily were looking at just replacing the pool in its same location. If you get too much further away, then you're going to add shower locker room costs unless you stay within 300 feet of the existing bathrooms and shower area, changing area.
And what you look at, because power and water is right where it is now.
Exactly.
So if you decide to go somewhere else in the facility, now you've got at least trenching costs or moving utilities around to support a pool at a more distant location.
Right.
Is that correct?
So if I understand correctly what you just mentioned, if we went forward with a pool, one of these combinations, our current restroom and showering facilities wouldn't meet the code.
They're close enough and they would satisfy the code, but what they don't satisfy is current ADA requirements. So that was the number that I mentioned, of about $29,000 of improvements for ADA. But that includes...
That includes facilities inside too then?
Yes, okay. And all the way to the street.
All right, so if you took the basic number of 1,065,000, we'd have to add another 30,000 to that.
Yes.
And we're going to be getting a report with those numbers in the next couple days, is that correct? Is that what you
have to say? Yes, it'll be sent to me tomorrow.
Okay.
And just for clarification, I believe it also, you would have 17,000 in addition to this that you had mentioned that would be required.
Those are other repairs around the site.
Sure.
The biggest one being having to do with the drainage problem in the front of the building.
But that would be in here.
That would not necessarily have to be within this project.
It doesn't
require that.
Okay.
But if you're doing this swimming pool, it does require ADA compliance.
Sure.
Just for, because I don't know how this works, and I'm curious more than anything else, you did the soils test, you confirmed that we don't need. So how is that, what kind of a test is that, and how is that done, just real briefly?
They took...
Do you do core samples, is that what you do?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, all right, that's good enough. Thank you.
I have one question. During the analysis, did you also look at the current parking lot configuration as far as the increased usage, and do we have enough spaces that's going to offset that?
No, we did not look at that. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions from the board?
I'm good. Thank you for your report.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike.
And open for public comments. Bill Helfrich.
Yes, Bill Helfrich on Beamer Court. Has this study included the concept of additional operating costs due now that we've got a 6-lane bigger pool? I think that needs to be considered in any budgeting that you're doing. The other thing is I did some research. I was here for the meeting when they talked about the pool. that they wanted it to be competition, you know, approved competition. And the research of mine is that there's very strict tolerances on the this 75-foot length, like within an eighth of an inch, and it has those costs to comply with that. With those tolerances been included in this competition estimate of the value. And then the other thing is, I've never been out back, but if I'm not sure what I would call it the outbuilding. What about locker rooms and restrooms and changing rooms? Now that they're talking about having these swim meets here with 700 people coming, where are we going to put them?
Thank you, Bill. Steph, did you get those questions? We've got those documented for Mr. Helfrich, the questions.
I've got two out of the three, okay. Yeah.
I've got the third. Okay, thanks. Okay, moving on to G1, discussion of possible action related to well 4A and well 2.
Do you want to go back to the direct staff to need to create a
yeah. Can I step back just one thing?
Exactly.
I know that's what you're talking about. Although we weren't going to make a decision, at least there was a direction that you wanted to give.
Well, we'd like to get direction from the board. I think these figures need to, we need to drill down through the actual reports themselves and come to a recommendation that can be brought back before the full board. Maybe it through an ad hoc committee, it can be through be assigned to a standing committee or some other recommendation the board may have.
Okay. And if I can just take the lead on this, and then you can take the discussion from the lead. I would say that we would take the information, we have additional data that we're going to get and receive, and take it back to the standing committee, to the Parks and Rec, and let them drill through, and if they need other input from other sources, they'll be able to do that. And after they do their analysis, they can bring back a recommendation to the board. And now we'll open it to board discussion.
I agree with President Mayor. I'd also ask staff to start crunching the numbers to see what that would mean in terms of financing, what cash reserves we might have, what financing options we might have, and take a look at the options for the design, apply the money to it, and just see, how we might pay for something if we decide to move forward.
Director Mayor.
Yeah, and I think that, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe that after it gets looked at by the standing committee with regards to the actual function, the pool, drilling down through those numbers, that it should probably go to the finance committee to be reviewed before it comes to the board, so we have kind of full input, or is that putting the cart in front of the horse?
I think that's a great recommendation.
Okay.
Thank you.
So it might be a two committee, might be in a step process, and we'll try to make that happen as quickly as possible.
Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions? Comments?
No.
Okay, then I would say, I don't know that that requires a motion, but I would say the direction would be standing committees, first and foremost, the Parks and Recreation for data gathering, analysis, and Finance Committee to see how this fits into the budget.
We understand.
Okay, now I'll move on to G1.
Can I make one quick comment? The committee should probably invite some of the swimming pool experts and lanes and also the Park and Recs committee, so they'd be able to come up to speed to help answer some of the questions that you may or may not have.
Yeah, I agree. I think it may be more than one meeting. It may incur a special meeting at some point just to expedite things.
Good. Okay. And the Rec and Parks Committee, can I at least say, I think it's Director Gupta and Director Grenz.
You got it.
Just for clarification, so that everyone knows. Now, on to G1.
Okay, I'm going to bring Justin up to talk about the
show.
The wells.
Good evening.
Rehabs.
How you doing, buddy?
Hey, good, Kevin. How are you?
Good evening, Board. So the topic tonight is to discuss the rehabilitation of the district's water supply wells 4A and 2, which is currently underway. And the recommended action is to increase the CIP budget for the work taking place for pump repairs and the well cleaning process. So I'm going to just provide a kind of a brief overview of what we're conducting, so you have kind of a context and sense of what's going on. With the staff report was included the original bid prices from the well contractor, from the pump contractor, and then the revised costs that we're proposing, which caused us to go over the CIP budget. So we could talk in any level of detail you wish on those numbers. As a general overview, the town has five water supply wells that serve the town's water, two that serve the Newport plant, and three that serve the Little Lake plant. As far as asset management and determining the needs for maintenance, what the town does is conducts testing on the wells and the pumps every 2 years. We track data from historical to where it currently is. And from the testing, we can determine if there is decline in production or efficiency, if it's related to the well structure itself, or if it's related to the pump equipment that's inside of it, or both. I have a figure in my mind maybe I should have brought, but I'm guessing you probably have some context for the wells and the pumps themselves. The wells are drilled with casing 300 to 500 feet deep that have screens that are screened in the water formation units. So those are permanent fixed assets. And the pumps are the equipment that's hanging inside the well, typically 180 to 260 feet deep. With different types of equipment. Sometimes it might be a submersible motor that's submerged underwater, or it might be a motor that's on top with a line shaft running all the way down. So the pump equipment is typically a shorter lifespan than the well structure itself. The wells, we like to think of them as 50-year minimum life cycles, and the newer wells even longer with the standards that we're using today. So there's two different assets that we're focusing on, the well and the pump. And in the biannual testing from 2017, we were able to determine, just from the data we collect above surface without doing any removing the pumps or anything, we're able to look at it and say, well 4A is 23 years old. It's a critical supply from Newport. The pump, the efficiency was off, the pump was off, the drawdown was off. And so when you compare it to historic data, told us there's some clogging in the well. There's a well, the well needs to be cleaned, and the pump itself is also off in terms of efficiency and performance. So being that it's a critical supply well, and pretty much with all the wells in the district, we try to do these rehabs during the winter time when the demands are low. Because what we don't want to happen when we see something with the pump is that it's failure during the summer kind of peak periods. So with 4A, we developed a program, bid items. And with these rehabs, we don't quite know exactly until we pull the pump. The first step when we go into this is we have a pump contractor pull the pump. We can visually assess condition. We put a video down inside the well. We can look at the, visually see the casing, look at any corrosion, look at buildup on the screens, look and see if there's a lot of material filled in the bottom of the well. And from there, kind of refine the approach of the well cleaning process. So well two, the story there was the well seems to be operating. The performance hasn't changed in terms of the drawdown of the well. However, the pump the efficiency was off and the performance of the pump was off its curve. So that tells us this pump is probably in need of maintenance. And so with well two, it's a little bit more unique than the others because well two is the one over here by the firehouse. It's in the building. It has the line shaft type of assembly, and it has an oil lubricated line shaft assembly specifically, which is not something the state allows anymore. So if we pull that pump out, we're replacing it with a different type of system, which is not big in the grand scheme of things, but just for some context there. It drove some of the decisions we were making developing the program. So when we put the bids together, we were essentially getting costs for different variables, different things that might happen. And kind of planning on the minimum, but then waiting till we pulled it to assess it to see what needs to be done. After we pulled the pumps, there's column pipes that attach the pump and hang the pump, and we're trying to see, ask ourselves, can we reuse any of this? Because in some cases we can. But just when we look at the service it's had about 20 years, and the fact that there might be a handful of them that could be reused, there's like 10 pieces all together, we might be able to reuse a few. It doesn't really make sense at that point to put something in that'll just be the weak link, you know, and cause us to go in 2 or 3 years as opposed to going back in 10 years. So we had the line item costs, and what we're proposing is all new pipe, and then the bowl assembly itself, a lot of times we can refurbish those. We can put in, you know, different components, wear rings and bearings, new line, new bowl shaft, all the stuff that we work out with the contractor, we evaluate with the contractor, and this is, by the way, we work with this contractor a lot, so we know their skill level. They just don't have any confidence in being able to do any work on the bowls and repair them. So, you know, they're recommending that we replace the bowl assembly. So that's what the story is with four, is we need to get new pump bowls, new column pipe. The motor is in good condition, and we plan to reuse it, because those are the biggest dollar value of all the equipment in there, is the submersible motor in 4A. And it's top of the line type of motor that will last decades. And so we check to make sure that it's insulated, the insulation is good, that the efficiency of the motor is good, and we plan to put that back in rather than replacing it. But the pump, column pipe, all of that. And so with well two, it's kind of the same story. We looked at possibly repairing or reusing the column pipe with the contractor, and we looked at other options in terms of different materials that we can use. There's new PVC products that you can use to hang the pumps from. But in terms of the capacity of these pumps, it's kind of too close to the threshold for what those PVC column pipes can handle. So we don't think this is the right scenario for that. So that's the story on the pumps. And in terms of the well rehabilitation, that all went fairly smooth. What we do with the well cleaning, when the contractor goes in to do the cleaning, it's a series of brushing, chemical application, trying to break up any solids that are, and we purge that into the aquifer system, so we're breaking up any solids that are causing the clogging to occur in the first place. And then they go in with an airlift, and they can concentrate the flow, they pump all that material out. And once we see the water is clean and we've gotten all the chemicals out, we know that we've cleaned it up. And so in terms of, we don't know how much time that process will take, so we do everything by hours, labor hours. They give us rig rate costs, they give us chemical volume costs, and we adjust it as we go if we need to continue cleaning up the well. So we were pretty close on the well contractor side. They had to spend a little bit more time on well 4A, so those costs are gonna be slightly higher. And with well two, I think we're probably pretty much, I don't have all of the field reports yet and tally up the hours or gotten the contractor's final bill yet, but what we're requesting is a $50,000 increase to cover the pump components. And the pump components are what puts us about 40,000 or so over the budget. And that additional money is just so that we don't have to come and do another update for a budget request if the well contractor's costs are a little bit higher from the time we spent on that.
Thank you, Jasmine.
You mentioned about the coated pipe being coated, the column pipe being coated.
Right, so part of the reason why the costs are so much higher now is a requirement from the state. It's a new-ish requirement. It's maybe 5 years old or so. And so we wouldn't have been doing this if we were doing the rehab 5 years ago, but we're required to coat the column pipe in an epoxy paint system that prevents the water from contacting the bare steel, because they can't get the bare steel certified under a new drinking water certification regulation because of the way steel is kind of made different each time. It's kind of hard to explain, but there's certain products you can get an NSF 61 rated system on pump column pipes, you cannot. So what we have to do is coat the pipes with epoxy, an epoxy system that can hold to the condition that it's going to be in, and it doubles the cost of the pipe. So we've been tackling that regulation for the last 5 years or so.
Important piece of data. Thanks, Virgil.
Thank you.
Yep.
Questions? Well, so that was what I wanted to address. As you probably figured out, Justin, I'm allowed to loop these days, but we had discussed that in previous meetings with regards to the epoxy coated column pipe, and you had said you were going to look into the fact if we reused it,
yeah,
whether or not we had to. So that's just going to eliminate
that
all
was
that
a
question.
Decision. That was a decision point for us.
Okay,
was,
very good.
And that was the answer. If we reuse the pipe, the district said, hey, this pipe has been in there since before that regulation. Not the district, I'm sorry.
The state.
The state, DPW.
Right.
So we were really asking ourselves, well, we can put it back in and we're not violating any regulation, but we might be creating more issues for us down the road.
Understood.
Especially with well two, which is, it's the oldest well, it's like 47 years. And so what would be the failure point is maybe like a hole in the column pipe. And then when you're running the pump, you're jetting water at your casing and just could create way more issues than just having to replace the pump.
So, okay,
yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Other questions? Okay,
thank you.
Do I hear a motion?
Well, I'll give it to the public.
Comment? Oh, thank you. Public comment? I see no public comments. We'll close public comments.
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Here, first and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?
Thanks, Justin.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, manager's report, do we have any?
No manager.
Okay. Director's report, a little different format, standing committee report, water, wastewater committee. I'll start with that. I was the only one there. The meeting was primarily for me. It was an update on me on all the programs that they've got. It was a very useful about 45 minutes. So we just went over all of the activities because I'm a new member on the standing committee. Second was Contra Costa Special District CCSDA.
Yes, Director or President Mayor and General Manager Davies and I attended the quarterly meeting of the Contra Costa County Special Districts Association. There were a couple of items. They're looking for a alternate representative to the Contra Costa County Redevelopment Agency Oversight Committee. If anybody's interested, please let Stan Caldwell know. The meat of the committee, or the meeting, was a presentation by Neil McCormick, who's the president of the State California Special Districts Association, and he kind of walked through some new programs and changes that are going to be happening with the associations and finance issues and so forth. So it's all in minutes. You can look it up if you're interested. And they also had a presentation by the Contra Costa County Historical Society.
And on to the Communications Committee.
Director Coteau and myself were just appointed to that committee. We had our first meeting today. It was decided that I would be chairman this first year and Brian would be chairman next year. And we talked about, we got a message board update. We're still working through some red tape.
What message board?
Well, the one that hasn't arrived yet, but we've been working on it for about a year.
I forgot there was a message for you.
So further information to come on that item. But we did move forward with the idea that someday it would be here. We're going to have a message board policy, which kind of helps us and helps the community understand what can go on that message board. In three or four different areas. Basically, it's for emergency purposes. And that would mean that board, if it's emergency, could be running 24/7. So we did discuss having some time limits on non-fundraiser kind of programs and whether we should have community items and things like that. And Manager Davies is going to work back and bring to us a policy, and we'll discuss that and bring it to the board.
Well, we know it's in good hands, and we hope to see that signed soon.
Well, going to take my time on this to make sure we get it right.
Next is the AB1234 ethics training, which I took in November. I have to report that, so it has been reported. It's a very good course. AB1825 harassment training was even better. And I did that one in December.
And so did I, and there's my written report.
And so did I.
And lastly, we've got the state of the town gala.
Yeah, I think that the policy says we have to put in a written report at the next board meeting after we do the training.
I think it's written more.
Get the certificates.
Yes.
I didn't get it.
I didn't either, but I'm sure it's coming right here.
Okay, but the policy, I'm sorry, point of order. Council, we have a policy in this, the state has a policy that if you have to, as I recall, you have to turn in a written report after the next meeting after taking the course. Is that correct?
Oral.
It's written or oral.
Oh, written, oral. I'm sorry. I was told at one point that it was written.
Yeah, it's written, oral, or the certificate. The certificate that they get and you can print off is sufficient for the written portion of it.
Right.
Okay. I just want to report that Director Joe also took the AB ethics, AB123 ethics training and the AB185 harassment training on January 3rd and January 4th, Commissioner.
I'm pretty sure I think I did.
I'm not sure that qualifies as a report.
not either.
Turn in your certificate is what I will say.
I have to verify that.
Carol should have a copy of your certificate.
Well, thank
you.
It is written report, but as Rod said, the written portion of the report for the ethics portion of the training, the certificate would suffice.
Got it. My concern is that the particular course I took online that was sent to me by the town did not provide me with a certificate. So I'm assuming that certificate was sent to the town through the same subscription process. Yes. Can that be verified?
You can print your certificate at the completion.
No, you can't.
No,
not
you can't.
The course that I took, I could not.
The town of Discovery Bay.
You get it.
Okay.
May I say, though, that the resolution...
Please don't argue with me at a meeting, sir. I'm telling you that the course I took...
No one really cares.
Okay.
Keep
going. You've got the floor.
I just want to confirm that the town received mine because I did not receive confirmation on that.
On your certificate?
That's correct.
I will check. But the resolution that was adopted in January does say that you have to have a written report for ethics, training, and harassment.
That's why I handed you one.
Well, yes, I know, instead of just the certificate. I just want to make sure I understand what I'm supposed to do. The resolution that was adopted.
As the staff policy is... At this point, your day of service is what you're being compensated for the trainings. The training, in order to be compensated, requires a written report. The certificate would qualify as a written report of attendance at that meeting.
I will check with Sue. She monitors all that. I'll make sure that all the certificates have been turned in. I know she can monitor that. And if we need anything else, we'll work it out and get back to you.
Okay, thank you. And I, along with Director Lee, I did have a certificate, so there seems to be an issue with the one that the court, so that needs to be cleared up with Director Graves.
I did send Sue an email asking her, and I didn't receive a response, so I'm assuming she has it.
Okay.
Might give you the opportunity to print it out.
You did.
And once you complete it, just...
Director Guto as well. Okay. Okay, and the last one on the list is the State of the Town Gala event. The entire board attended the State of the Town Gala on Saturday, January 26, 2019, along with other local leaders and many residents. I was able to present a brief update highlighting points of interest for 2018. And by the time I got into the projects for 2019, the noise level rose, so I concluded quickly. But all board members took the opportunity to socialize with the guests and responded to many questions. Okay. General Manager's report. Oh, pardon me. Any public comment on any of those? Okay. Public comment is closed and General Manager's report.
No report.
Legal? I turn it to you.
At this time, the town of Discovery Bay will adjourn to closed session to address the items identified on the agenda as N1 and N2.